From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Gary Lilly.
Good morning to all our military personnel around the world. Thank you for preserving our freedom. Good morning to my veteran brothers and sisters. Welcome home. And good morning to you folks down there in Australia, New Zealand, and Tasmania. Thank you for listening in and your great allies to America. And we to you. Good morning, America. This is Veterans Radio. My name is Gary Lilly. Chu Lai, Vietnam Republic of 1966. CB, can do. And sitting behind that big, thick sheet of glass, behind a pile of electronic gear, is the Air Boss, Bob Gould.
Left, your left side.
Airborne.
Your left side.
Airborne.
One, two,
three, four.
Hey, four.
One, two, three, four. You left, you right, you're airborne. You're airborne all the way. Hey, airborne.
How about that one, eh?
We have to do
this. Is all my screaming eagles out there.
Yeah.
Wah.
You're brothers, right?
Oh, yeah, brothers.
Yeah.
All the way.
Okay, we're going to be talking to a couple of them later on in the show about a fierce battle that they participated in. But right now we're talking to Paula Zazadny. Paula is the mother of her daughter was killed in Iraq, Army Specialist Holly, McGyo? Help me out, please, Paula. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How do you pronounce the late her name?
It was Magoo.
Magoo, okay.
Yes.
All across America, there's memorials being built to our fallen in the Iraq and Afghanistan war. And I've done a lot of studying on PTSD. And, folks, that's one of the things that heals people coming back from wars. You're not going to come back from a war the same. And one of the things that is healing is the fact that there are memorials built, that America grieves the fallen and recognizes the those that are living. And you're doing just such a thing. Is that not right, Paula?
Yes, I'm working on the staff of the Fallen Heroes Memorial Foundation.
And where will that, that's to build a memorial, and where will that be built?
This memorial will be built at the 210th Military Police Battalion here in Taylor.
Taylor, Michigan, that is.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we have people all across the country, well, in other parts of the world listening to us, too. How did this get started?
This project?
Correct.
This project got started when there's four different units that fall under the 210th, and they're all from Michigan, and they have lost four soldiers that fall under the 210th Battalion. That's Sergeant Craig Frank, Sergeant First Class James Priestat, Specialist Brandon Stout, and Sergeant Thomas Wright. And those are the four names that will be on this memorial that will be placed at the 210th Military Battalion.
210th, you're talking, is that the 2nd Battalion, 10th Regiment, or what is that?
No, it's the 210th Military Police Battalion.
Oh, 210?
Yes.
Okay. See, I was a CB. They had to keep things simple for us. MCB1, MCB2, up to about 10, and then we'd lose track. Ran out of toes and fingers. Whose idea was this? Who inspired it?
I believe it was the Command Sergeant Major, Sandy Sherrout, from the 210th Military Police Battalion.
And how is it that you're raising money?
Well, they have raised all of the money for this memorial, and they're only shy $1,800. And that's when myself and Kimberly and Sue stepped up and said, hey, let's do a bake sale and try to raise the $1,800 that they're short.
That's fantastic. Folks, you can pay $50 for a cake. This is for raising money. Where will this cake sale be held, and how do people find you?
Well, we're going to be at Taylor Auto Glass. The address is 20511 E-Course Road, and that's in Taylor, Michigan. And we'll be selling all kinds of baked goods from 9 a.m. tomorrow till 5 p.m.
Oh, that's going to be on Sunday, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to pay $50 for a cake. You can go out there and pay the going rate. Where do the cakes and baked goods come from?
Well, I started baking last night, and we'll be baking all day today. And all of my family and my friends and a lot of the wives from the soldiers of the 210th and the different units that fall under the 210th, we're all pitching in.
All right, great. That's a terrific thing. Get out there to buy the baked goods. And everybody out there around the country, this is how people coming home from war heal. Do the memorials. Do your fundraising. Get a few people and get these things started. Paula Zazadny, thank you so much for what you did or and are doing. And it's great to remember those. Thank you, Paula.
And I would just like to say to all the veterans out there, we love you, and thank you so much for your service.
And thank you, Paula.
Thank you.
Bob, that is such an important part of healing for the troops coming back from war. I've done a lot of studying on PTSD, and memorials are healing. So we have...
And I think that we're seeing more and more of that now.
Oh, boy, I hope so.
I do, too.
Yeah. And another way of healing is to welcome the troops home.
Oh, yes, indeed it is. Welcome home. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who have been stationed around the world in the service of their country. Dateline, Jacksboro, Tennessee. Members of the 1175 Transportation Company from Jacksboro arrived in Middle Tennessee after being deployed in the Middle East for 1 year. Dateline, Montgomery, Alabama. 16 members of the Alabama National Guard's Light Infantry Team 4 returned to Montgomery after nearly a year on active duty in Afghanistan. They spent the last year training, managing, and supporting members of the Afghan National Army. Dateline, Utah. After deployment in Iraq, 130 soldiers from the 1st Battalion, 145th Field Artillery Unit, Utah National Guard, returned home to a celebration headed by a large group of the Patriot Guard Riders. Vroom, vroom. All those guys go. They're everywhere.
I love it.
Yeah, we're going to have them on the air. Absolutely. Dateline, Birmingham, Alabama. More than 150 members of a Cullman-based Army National Guard unit was welcomed home following a tour of 8 months in Kuwait and Iraq. Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 167th Infantry, logged more than 1 million miles guarding supply convoys to and from U.S. military installations throughout Iraq. Dateline, Manhattan, Kansas. The Kansas National Guard says 160 members of the 35th Military Police deployed to Iraq returned to the unit's headquarters in Topeka. Welcome Home is sponsored each week by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. For more information regarding the Marine Scholar Program, visit them online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. Welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu. Or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com. Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnegat Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail, and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. Today we're going to be talking about one of the most widely known battles that took place in Vietnam. In fact, there was a movie made of it, and this is the anniversary of it. The movie is the same name as the battle, Hamburger Hill. And we have two men that participated in the final assault on that hill, Art Wicknick and Howard Siner. I think you guys were in the 2nd Battalion, 506th Regiment, 101st Airborne. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. We're talking to Art right now, correct?
Yes.
All right. And Howard's there. But this morning, first off, we're going to start with you, Art. You're the author of a book called Nonsense, and one of the chapters is about that battle. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. Phyllis, what was the rest of the book about?
Well, actually, the rest of the book, it's more about an experience of being in war. It's not about tactics or strategies and things like that. It's not a history book. It's
right.
Just all my experiences. And one of the reasons I wrote it is because Vietnam vets had such a bad image when we first came home. I wanted to show people that most guys served honorably, bravely, and didn't do all these things that the media had accused us of.
That's right. If you take a look at young kids around the country today, that's who we were, and being Vietnam veterans and serving in Vietnam didn't mean that we were different. I mean, war changes you, but it was the same good young people that were serving in the military as are walking the streets.
Absolutely. I'm very proud of my service, and I can honestly say I've done nothing to bring shame on my unit or my family.
There's any number of ways you could have gotten out of Vietnam, and so serving in Vietnam was a mark of character, and that character never changed. But let's get back to what's going on here. The movie Hamburger Hill is being re-released. Is that correct?
Yeah, it just came out on. It was re-released on May 20th, which was the 39th anniversary of the victory in the battle.
It's being released on DVD. Is it being shown around any theaters?
I don't believe so. I think it's a rental, or you can purchase it at go ahead.
No, I said okay. Yeah, I was watching it last night doing my homework. I've got a copy of it, not the new release. And during the middle of a storm, it sounded like a mortar run. And thankfully, I only experienced that one time. But all of a sudden, all the lights went out, and I thought I'd blown up my my TV, my hanging there on the wall. Oh no. But that movie, was it accurate or was it not accurate, Art,
saw? You can pick apart any war movie. I would say for the most part, I would say it's 50 to 60% accurate. There's a few things I didn't like they wore a subdued patch, and we wore the bright white patch.
Yeah.
These guys went up the hill in each assault in the movie wearing a backpack or a rucksack. Although the one they had was like a little fanny pack. We carried 60 pounds, but you're not going to go up and do an assault, carrying your rucksack on your back, because you just can't do it.
Right. It's the physical limitations. And there's a lot of things to snag them on.
Correct.
Okay. So you were in the first of the 506. It was the third of the 187th that participated in the whole battle and took the brunt of that battle. Go ahead.
The third of the 187th, those guys really deserve a lot of credit because they were there from day one to the final day, and they took the heaviest losses. They participated in every assault. Those guys really deserve credit and recognition for what they had to endure.
And if any of you guys are listening, I'd sure love to have you contact Veterans Radio because we'd like to do a follow-up show on the entire Battle of Hamburger Hill. What was the official name for the military was Hill 937. What was the Vietnamese name for it?
Well, let's see if I got it right. Dong Ap Bia.
I was going to leave it up to you to pronounce that.
I don't know if I got it right.
I've got it written down in front of me, and I wasn't going to try it.
That's how it's spelled anyhow.
Okay, yes. What was your... well, let's go back to the second week in May. Where were you?
Well, actually, our company was sent on a stand down to Eagle Beach. We were spending 2 nights and 3 days on a beach outside of Da Nang, eating hot dogs and drinking beer. In the meantime, the 3rd of the 187th had gotten involved on Hamburger Hill. We had no knowledge of this. So around the 17th of May, now the battle had been going on for 7 days already, we were brought back to Camp Evans, our base camp. And we were told that we're going into the Eshaw Valley because some of our buddies have run into a problem out there. We're going to go help them. So, we didn't know anything about it. On the next morning, we got on a Chinook. We flew out to the valley floor and waited for Slicks to pick us up so we can be ferried to a landing zone near the base of the mountain.
And the Chinook carried how many men?
I would say it carries roughly a platoon. I don't know for sure. I've only ridden on a Chinook a couple of times.
Okay. And the Slick carried the Huey helicopter.
The Huey would carry six people.
Six people. All right. So Howard Siner, you were a member of the squad, the same squad that Art Wicknick was squad leader for?
Right. Excuse me. Art was my squad leader. He was a sergeant. I was a private.
Okay. Art, You use the term of the type of sergeant that you were. What is it for the folks out there?
I'm a shake and bake.
Tell the people what that means.
Well, that was it's also known as an instant NCO. When the Army was having trouble recruiting people for small unit leadership, so they designed a course at Fort Benning called Non-Commissioned Officer Candidate School. And they picked out people who they thought they had leadership skills, and they enrolled them in this course. It was took 6 months. And it's probably the one thing that helped keep me alive because it gave me a little more insight on how to deal with people and some tactics and strategies. So when I came out of there, I came out as an E5. And a lot of guys who had spent a lot of time in the military, it took them years to achieve that rank. I did it in less than a year.
And so when you arrived in Vietnam then, you were sent in there to lead men who had been in the field for quite some time that were lower ranking and knew their way around, one of them being Howard Siner. Howard, how did you feel when Art joined the squad as the squad leader?
Well, actually, he joined a little bit before I did, so about 2 weeks or so before I got there, so it was a different situation.
Oh, okay. I thought you were already in there.
No.
How many men in your squad, and all these units were always light over there, were they not?
Well, each squad was roughly 10 people. And the platoon was made up of four squads, and with our command post and so forth. There's usually 35 to 40 people at any given time in a platoon.
I've heard of them getting down to 16 when due to casualties and rotations out and lack of replacements. But let's get I'm getting away from the battle. You guys arrived at the foot of the hill. What? Tell me what was going on when you arrived.
Well, we were being flown in, and we didn't know for sure where the action was until the helicopters were flying around in a fairly large circle. And off in the distance, you can see this one mountain that was all brown against the green backdrop. So you know that's where the action was. And as we were coming in, the door gunner says, we're not going to land. You guys are going to have to jump out because we're each Huey coming in is taking sniper fire. So, with 60 pounds on my back, I didn't want to jump out of that thing. But as the helicopter came in, it was hovering, and I'm looking, I'm waiting for him to land, and the door gunner's yelling, jump out. I says, well, land. Well, then he shoved me, and out I went. And I think the same thing happened to Howard.
Yeah, that's right. They were taking fire. It was a hot LZ, and it was late in the day, about dusk, and kind of a difficult situation. So they didn't really land. They came into the edge of this is a hill near the foot of Hamburger Hill. This down below, and they just I jumped, but he would have pushed me the same way, and we're about 10, 12 feet or more off the ground.
That's a long jump with the load on your back. All right, you hit the ground. Gathered yourself up. What did you do then, Art?
Well, the first thing I noticed when I got up, I start crawling, getting myself together, and I look up, and who's standing in front of me but Major General Melvin Zayas. And when I saw him, my first thought was, wow, a general. And then I go, oh, my God, a general. You know, out here? My thought then is, what in the world are we in for?
Kind of a bad sign, right?
Yeah, to me it was. Yeah.
This wasn't when you first arrived. You'd been over there about a month. Is that right, Art?
That's correct.
And who were you fighting up to that point?
Before that, it was Viet Cong, and we only saw one or two. You know, our action was very, very limited. You know, I was really a green cherry, and I think Howard was the same way. We had to contend with a few booby traps. We were around a village, so we had to deal with the villagers a little bit. But, you know, we had no real combat experience.
And, Howard, you were there even less time, apparently, than Art?
Yeah, a little bit less than a month. He was there for about a month before we got to Hamburger Hill, and I was probably there for about 2 or 3 weeks. We had only seen a little bit of light action around our base camp, Camp Evans, so we were not prepared for anything like that, although you have to be ready for anything. One of the ways that we knew this was different than what we had seen was when we got to the floor of the Eshov Valley, they said the chaplains are here. And we knew that wasn't a real good sign. We knew because they don't usually do that with combat units unless it's something serious. You know, you'll see the chaplain at the base camp or at a moment when everything is safe and quiet, but they were right there with us, and that kind of was one of the ways we found out this. They were really serious.
Was there fighting going on at the time that you were arriving?
Yes, not far away. This was on the floor of the valley, and then thereafter they flew us up to an LZ that the 3rd of the 187th had cut, which was on the edge of the hill, still in the jungle. But as Art mentioned before, the whole upper half of the hill was bombed and napalmed and everything else, and it was all brown, and there was not much cover up there, and that's where a lot of the action took place in the last couple of days.
And you guys walked up to the foot of the hill through the jungle a ways. You left your rucksacks, is that correct, where you landed?
Well, that was kind of an interesting story, too, because we all the rucksacks were thrown into a huge pile. We thought they were just there, you know, for someone to keep an eye on them. We didn't realize we were not going to come back and get them. So Howard and I decided, because all the rucksacks look alike. Everything looks the same, so we would never be able to find ours. We hid ours in the bushes. We were going to be smart. And we never saw them again.
Outsmarted yourself, right?
That's okay. Right.
You saw some of the men of the 3rd of the 187th when you arrived at the foot of the hill. What was that scene like?
That was something I never expected. The area where they were staying, the place looked awful. The ground vegetation was trampled down, right down to dirt. There was equipment strewn everywhere. The area stunk of human waste. And the guys were filthy, unshaven. A lot of them just kind of just stared, and they were in like a zombie state. And apparently from all these assaults and watching their buddies getting killed. And then at that moment, I said to myself, you know what? Here these poor guys were out here going through this, and we were at Eagle Beach. You know, how you know, it's not just ironic. It was embarrassed. Go ahead.
No, I was thinking the juxtaposition of that, and I always thought about that myself when I was over there, and we'd have once a month we'd have parties on the beach in the Sunday afternoon, and I thought, geez, there's guys out in the jungles right now.
Right.
So didn't somebody say something to you?
Yes. Because I was a sergeant. One of the guys spotted me right away, and he says, "Sergeant, you got to take those stripes off. Otherwise, you're never going to see the top of that hill." He says, "Because the NVA are shooting the leaders first." And then he pointed to our machine gunner and says, "Take your tracers out, because they're going to see where the tracers are coming from, and they're going to know you're a machine gunner, and they're going to go after you too." And, you know, my first thought was, man, you know, what the heck is going on here? So I didn't do it. I didn't take my stripes off because I wasn't really sure if he was just pulling my leg or what was going on.
Then there's a lot of that goes on, and I had a very mild thing, but I had the same experience. You know, are these guys being serious, or are they trying to get the new guy? And they were being serious. So you moved on past them, did you?
Yes, we did. We moved along. We tried to get into position along the base of the hill, staying inside the tree line. And it took so long to get into position, as well as other companies that were involved in the final assault, that we had to wait another day before we would finally make the final assault.
It started off with we were pretty. They didn't know what kind of resistance or how well manned that hill was. They had an inkling of it, but were they shorthanded when they first attacked it, the third of the 187th?
Well, I think they initially went in company size, and then they called in. I think they did that for I don't know all the details, but
right.
I think for a couple of days they tried to get this get up that hill company size, and then other companies of the 3187th were getting meeting resistance on different ridges around the mountain. So then they started to get an idea that maybe this is a little bit bigger than we thought it was.
Just to back up a bit, give a little background to it. This hill, Hamburger Hill, was in the Ashaw Valley. It was about 2 kilometers or 2 miles from the Laotian border.
Correct.
Okay, about 2 kilometers?
Probably 1 to 2 miles.
Okay.
It was fairly close.
And the NVA had taken tremendous losses during the Tet 1968 offensive, but they were starting to regroup. They'd pretty much been pushed out of the Ashaw at that time, had they not, after Tet?
Well, actually, I think, I don't know about after Tet, but I know that the Ashaw had a dirt road running down the middle of it, and I think the NVA used that as one of their arteries of the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And by us being there, the 101st, we were a thorn in their side, so they were going to look like they were going to make a stand and try to force us to leave.
We were part of the first operation to go in there at that point and try to confront these guys. They pretty much could do as they pleased in the Ashaw Valley near the Laotian border, and the 101st didn't want them to use that as a stronghold to then come forward and attack the cities and villages on the coast, which is what happened with Wei. So we were trying to, during Tet, so we were trying to confront them out there away from the populated areas.
And people think of the Ho Chi Minh Trail as being this little path through the jungle. They were bringing trucks, and they had fuel lines running alongside of it, heading down as far south as 30 miles north of Saigon. Go ahead.
In Laos and Cambodia, but there was nothing like that in the Ashaw Valley that I saw, but there was a dirt road running down the middle of it.
Supposedly there was also a hospital. There's a lot of underground tunnels and things inside Hamburger Hill, and supposedly there was some kind of a makeshift hospital there, too, for wounded NVA.
Did you guys see a lot of communications lines strung out when you arrived there, or had they been all blasted to pieces?
I didn't see it on Hamburger Hill, but later on we worked the Ashaw Valley for a while, and we came across the communication lines out in the jungle in different places.
I ran into a friend that said that they came across a 6-inch communication line, and they thought, oh, this is serious. We're coming into a break right now. We're going to be coming back with the battle itself. You're listening to Veterans Radio on the Ave Maria Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Hospital apprentice Fred McGuire, after emptying his rifle, used it as a club. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
While attached to the USS Pampang, McGuire was one of a shore party moving in to capture Mundang, Philippine Islands, on the morning of 24 September 1911. Ordered to take station within 100 yards of a group of huts close to the trail, McGuire advanced and stood guard as the leader and his scout party first searched the surrounding deep grasses, then moved into the open area before the huts. Instantly, the enemy opened point-blank fire on the exposed men, and approximately 20 enemy charged the small group from inside the huts and from other concealed positions. McGuire, responding to the calls for help, was one of the first on the scene. After emptying his rifle into the attackers, he closed in with his rifle, using it as a club to wage fierce battle until his comrades arrived on the field, when he rallied to the aid of his dying leader and other wounded. Although himself wounded, McGuire ministered tirelessly and efficiently to those who had been struck down, thereby saving the lives of two who otherwise might have succumbed to enemy-inflicted wounds.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Pat the Handyman and his team is ready to help you with your remodeling, repair, and painting projects. Call Pat the Handyman at 734-260-1158. That's 260-1158. Pat the Handyman is a veteran-owned business.
There's always a moment of truth where it's either put up or shut up. We were yelling our hearts out. Even in our weakness, even in our pain, we continued to push. I don't know where the pain went to, but all I know is that I had what it took. I am a United States Marine.
PFC Darrell Willis serves his country as a Marine. Will you? Visit Marines.com or call 1-800-MARINES.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com.
Gary Lilly Lillian Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lillian Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lillian Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference. And we're back on Veterans Radio talking about the Battle of Hamburger Hill in Vietnam in the month of May 1969. We're with Howard Siner and Art Wicknick, who was in the final assault. Howard, from your perspective, how did the day start for the final assault?
Well, in my case, we were in the jungle at the edge of the base of the mountain, or as probably as close as you could get without being exposed to the enemy. And they sent me back. The assault began at 10 a.m., and but about 8 o'clock in the morning, they sent me back to the landing zone where we had first come in to pick up a recoilless rifle, which was a 90-millimeter weapon, and it's very, very heavy.
I was going to say, they're not light.
Yeah. So I had to carry it on my back for about an hour up the hill, and then before we even began the assault. So I was kind of exhausted at that point, even before it began. But that's what I did. Art and the rest were poised at the edge of the hill, waiting for commands to go up, I guess.
I got to be honest with you. I didn't know one guy could carry a 105.
Well, you can do it.
They don't give you many options or choices. They don't ask you if you want to do things. Art, from your perspective, what was going on? What time of day did you get up?
Well, the same thing. What time did we get up? We were awake most of the night. Hardly anybody slept because there was a lot of strange noises coming from the hill. There were some fires burning up there, either from napalm or the NVA deliberately started a few fires just to let us know they were still there. But in the morning, I think an NVA soldier walked into one of our positions with a grenade, and they shot and killed him. So that's when our lieutenant says, put your bayonets on, and we are not taking any prisoners today.
By the way, I wanted to mention that's one of the commands you never want to hear. They put us all online, and they said, okay, everybody, fix bayonets. So that's about as rough a reminder as you get of what's going on.
Gets your attention.
Yes.
Now, that NVA soldier, he was walking in acting like he was surrendering. Is that right?
That's what the report read, yes.
Okay.
Because he didn't have a rifle. He just had a grenade, but he had it partially hidden behind him.
And so when people sitting back here at desks or in an easy chair here in the United States, the world, hear about somebody saying no prisoners, they can sometimes be judgmental.
Well, if these guys are going to be there for 10 days and still fight, and then they have people walking into our position with a grenade, he was going to be a suicide bomber, obviously. So
right.
These guys are not going to give up, so there's no sense in trying to take any prisoners.
How would you describe the NVA soldier?
Very tenacious. At the time I had no respect for him, but when I think back about it, you know, those guys, they stood the ground from a merciless pounding of airstrikes, artillery, napalm. So they have to be given some credit for at least standing the ground.
And they were also dug in because I understand. I've seen photographs of the hill after the battle. It looked like it was a charred, churned-up mess and a bunch of short telephone poles burned out sticking up where once there was triple canopy jungle.
If you can imagine,
it looked like hamburger meat. That's how it got the name.
Right.
Yeah. Or if you can imagine a World War I battlefield, you know, that you see in an old movie, it looked very similar.
Right. And so did it start off with a pounding by the...
Yes, it was a artillery barrage. I think it lasted almost an hour. And I think all the fire bases in the valley that were within range were firing artillery rounds in there, 105s and 155s. And, of course, I thought, with all everything that has happened, all the airstrikes and everything, I said, man, there can't be anybody left up there. This is going to be easy.
Oh, I've heard that in so many battles, and they were tenacious, as you said, and there were a lot of them because they had a lot of them killed prior to that final assault.
Right.
You guys came across a lot of bodies, and, of course, a lot of them were buried underground.
Yes.
Howard, when the assault started, where were you in relation to Art? You were in his squad. Where were you in relation to him?
Well, fairly close, within, 15 meters or so.
How soon did you start taking fire?
Well, the first
immediately.
Thing... Immediately.
I'm sorry, I'm still with Howard.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Immediately, right as we... the jets stopped pounding the hill. They did that between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m., and then they said, okay, everybody online, which was we all got online at the edge of the last tree cover or vegetation or whatever, and then they said, move, let's go. And as soon as we got a little bit forward from the edge of the covered ground, we were under fire the whole way up.
What was the terrain? You talk about a hill, and some people might picture a nice little walk-up slope.
No, they had decimated the top half of the mountain, so it was cratered. Think of the moon. I mean, there were craters there. There was ground up soil. There was very very little cover of any sort. And Art on his way up has pretty dramatic incident to tell you about. I think we tried to take cover in some of those craters.
But it was a pretty steep hill, was it?
Yeah, very steep.
Okay, so there.
They call it a hill, but it's 937 meters, which is roughly 3,000 feet. This is we were attacking a mountain,
and a very steep mountain from the photographs I've seen. And it had been raining prior to that, and so the churned up dirt had turned to mud.
Correct.
Difficult to walk up under any circumstances, let alone when it's turned up and a lot of people shooting at you. So what did the enemy do, Art? What happened to you? What was your experience going up?
Well, a guy next to me had gotten wounded in the leg, and the medic came over and helped him. And I figured the three of us right there were too good of a target, so I moved to another. I rolled over to another bomb crater, and I could never find a target. I couldn't see anybody. All I could see was bullets hitting the ground around me. So I peeked over the edge of the dirt, and then I was suddenly blinded. And when I reached up to protect my eyes, something hit me in the chest and knocked me backwards. So I knew right then I had been hit. And but the pain in my eyes was one thing. The pain in my chest was another. And I thought that, this is the end of me. This is where I'm going to die. But the pain got more intense. And I thought as you die, pain goes away. So I finally get the dirt out of my eyes, and I look down at my chest, and I'm on fire. So I beat out the flames, and what had happened is an NVA had targeted me. His first round blasted dirt in my eyes, and when I reached up a second round, apparently a tracer hit me right square in the chest, but I had so much ammunition wrapped around me, so many magazines, that it did not penetrate into my body. Landed in my equipment. So it destroyed a couple of magazines that are wrapped around me. So right after that, I said, I'm getting the heck out of here. And I picked myself up. I ran past my guys. I saw some cover on the little ridge. I yelled at them, follow me, we're going up. And I took off, and I worked my way up to the top of the hill. And when I got there, I looked around. I said, I was going to turn around and tell the guys this is a good place to be. And nobody followed me. I was the only one there. So now I'm really scared. I'm up there by myself. I can still see the battle going on below me, and I didn't know what to do. So I just hunkered down behind a tree stump, and I waited. And then one of the first people I saw was Howard.
had to be a lonely feeling while that was going on. We're about 25 seconds away from a break, but a friend of mine, a grunt, described what you went through right there, and he said there's a difference between somebody shooting at you and somebody shooting at you.
Right.
and you know when somebody's got you targeted. And he was awarded the Silver Star, but it was because he was laying on a red anthill, and he had to move. So we'll be right back. You're on Veterans Radio on Ave Maria Radio. Gary Lilly & Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference.
Len Pitlack, CPA, is an award-winning consultant for the U.S. Small Business Development Center. Let him use his 25 years' experience to bring you, as an individual or small business owner, his professional and courteous tax and accounting services. Give Len Pitlack a call today at 734-993-1313. How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio talking about Hamburger Hill, the famous battle that took place in May of 1969 in Vietnam. Art Wicknick and Howard Siner were participants in the final assault on Hamburger Hill. Howard, I've heard about satchel charges and about claymores and trees. Did you encounter any of those, or explain what they were all about?
Well, satchel charges were just devices that the packages of explosives that they would carry and then throw at you. They place. And claymores were mines, landmines that the Americans used that were quite damaging. I don't think we ran into either one of them on Hamburger Hill. The 187th had some problems with satchel charges, I believe.
Okay, so it was a different unit that got hit by them. Right.
Well, I think, in the beginning, when the 3rd of the 187th first started their assault up the hill, the NVA hung claymores in the trees and command detonated them and also threw satchel charges at them. But once the place got bombed out so bad, there was no trees left to hide anything in.
Okay. And we'll find out more about them in a future show. Howard, you were going up the hill. Did you ever see any NVA? I mean, did it seem incredulous to you to be getting all that fire at you and not be able to see anybody?
Well, they were dug in. We could see, as Art mentioned, rounds hitting the dirt and smoke and things coming from different areas of the hill. But I didn't see anybody standing up. He would have been killed instantly. But they were undercover themselves, the ones that were still there.
They seemed to have a pretty good view of you, and you weren't able to see them. That must have been maddening.
Well, you can't do much about it. You just, right. You know, do what's necessary.
And so you charge up into the face of it. Is that right, Howard?
Yeah, sometimes it's safer to keep moving, at least for a couple of us. Most of our company was behind us, and some of them still at the edge of the tree line. The battle lasted for quite a while. We went up at 10, and we didn't get up until mid-afternoon. So there was a lot of moving around and firing back and forth, that kind of thing.
Right. The way we talk about it and describe it, it seems like such a brief time, but in reality I read that it was 6 hours long, the final assault. So you guys have been going up that hill working. How would you work your way up? It wasn't standing up and running, it was crawling and everything else. Is that correct, Howard?
That's right. A little bit of both. At one point my weapon jammed and I had to stay undercover for a little bit and try to fix it, but we were, firing so much that the weapons heated up. But once we did finally get up there, as Art mentioned, it was kind of lonely because there was only a few of us in our section of the hill. Others might have gotten up. We made the assault right next to the remaining companies of the 3rd or the 187th. But in our section of the hill to the south, he and I, by the time we got up there, there was only a few of us, and we had to kind of wait for the rest of the company to come up.
And how did you bide your time?
Well, carefully.
Art, from your perspective, what was going on when you hit the top of the hill and realized that the battle was still raging?
Well, I didn't know what to do. I saw some movement. I'm on top now. I'm on the crest, and I could see some movement in different places, but I couldn't tell if it was the enemy or Americans. I just stayed put because if I, being by myself and after running and crawling and being exhausted, I wasn't about to get up and start, getting active again because I couldn't. I was just totally exhausted, so I just sat there and waited, hoping that if anybody came my way, if he was the enemy, I was going to blast them.
You know, you raise an interesting point. Everybody was so muddy, it had to be hard at times to tell who was who.
Well, you can always tell a GI,
Okay.
One of the things we always did, we'd see somebody, we always flash the peace sign. The enemy never did that. We flashed a peace sign to each other, even though we were at war.
you and I the other day were talking, Art, and we talked about the humor that kept you going. Now, in the middle of a battle, I doubt that there's any humor going on, but there was a lot of humor, correct?
Well, one way to survive a situation like this, it's a very dramatic piece of your life, and I always looked at things in a humorous way, not because it's funny, but because to do otherwise, you turn into a basket case. You really have to kind of laugh things off and just keep going.
That's the way.
Art, tell them what happened that night on the hill. It's kind of funny in retrospect, anyway.
There must have been 500 or 600 GIs up on top of that mountain, and it was very quiet, very still. It wasn't a sound. And during the middle of the night, I was having a dream that I was looking for my entrenching tool, my shovel. And the guy next to me, the name of Jackson, he was having a dream that the NVA were coming out of the ground, because some of their bunkers had collapsed, and they were coming out to strangle us in our sleep. Well, I'm having this dream, I'm looking for my shovel, and I'm touching him. So he wakes up screaming. And when we start rolling around, he was going to beat the crap out of me. And Howard,
no, he was going to kill you.
Yeah, it wasn't going to be a fist fight, did it?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But fortunately, he probably couldn't find his bayonet.
Yeah.
Well, I was in the middle of these two guys, and I woke them both up, really. It was funny afterwards, but at the time, when I felt these guys on top of me, I thought we were being overrun. The first thing I thought of was Davy Crockett at the Alamo, oddly enough, because I figured I'd had to swing my rifle. They were too close to shoot. They were all over us. So a little bit of a scary incident at the time, because they had told us that night that the enemy was still all around us, and one of the worst commands you ever hear especially at night, is kill anything that moves. And that's what they told us to do, which is obviously not very funny. But later on, when Art and Jackson were rolling around on the ground, had a happy ending because everything turned out okay. But at the time, it seemed kind of difficult.
It could have had a tragic ending.
Well, the other thing that makes me always think about that particular incident is either Jackson or myself let out with a howl, and guys, a couple hundred feet away, I can't imagine what they were thinking in that still of the night and somebody just screaming.
I imagine they had their rifles to their shoulders, frantically trying to figure out where they were coming from, right?
Right.
When you got to the top of the hill, did you see the NVA fleeing?
I only saw one enemy soldier, and he was running away, and by the time I aimed at him, he disappeared, so I never even got a shot off at an actual target.
How about you, Howard?
Same as Howard. I didn't see that soldier he saw. All I saw was the gunfire that, from where it was coming from, but they were dug in, and a lot of them fled down the side of the mountain to Laos, but that was a little bit away from where we were.
And I understand that they ran into an ambush, and they were being pounded by artillery and mortars the whole way that they were running, and that probably made you guys feel pretty good.
Well, it was nice that they got what they deserved at that time.
Did you ever think about going back?
Me personally, no.
How about you,
I really have no desire.
Howard?
I couldn't do it. It'd be too tough a situation. A lot of guys have gone back through the years, but not me.
Okay. What do you have to say about the men you served with, Art?
The people I served with were terrific. Howard, not just because we're still friends today, but Howard was one of those calming influences. I was kind of a wise guy and a punk, and Howard always calmed me down. Even though he was a private and I was the squad leader, I actually depended on him quite a bit, him and another fellow, Dennis Sillig, who had passed away recently. But Howard was just one of the great guys, and I think everybody, as I mentioned earlier, served very honorably, very bravely. I can't get enough credit to the guys of the 3rd of the 187th for what they had to endure.
Howard, you saw the people fighting. What was your opinion of the character? We've got about a minute. Well, we got about 20 seconds left for you guys.
Well, they're very brave and honorable Americans. Very tough guys.
Did you ever see heroism that you couldn't fathom, Howard?
All the time.
Okay.
Well, I saw guys do things that I didn't want to do. There was guys ahead of me going up that hill. I said, "Man, I don't want." They're getting shot at.
Howard Siner, Art Wicknick, The Battle of Hamburger Hill. The movie has been re-released on DVD. I understand, Art, that you're one of the people that they were interviewed for that movie.
Yes.
Okay, we're coming to the end. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Marine Scholars Program, Schrader Yacht Sales in New Jersey. You can buy it from anywhere. Sperry Van Ness, Lilly & Associates, that's me. Thank you for listening in on Veterans Radio. We're just so proud to have you guys on the show with us, Howard and Art. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot, Gary.
You bet. You are dismissed.
Thank you.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of our guests and are not necessarily those of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.
Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.